Copyright 2011, JKP, Radha Madhav Dham. All rights reserved.
Swami Nikhilanand is a disciple of Jagat Guru Sri Kripaluji Maharaj. He resides at Radha Madhav Dham in Austin, Texas, which is the U.S. ashram of Jagat Guru Kripalu Parishad. He travels America preaching the philosophy of Sanatan Dharma as taught by Sri Kripaluji Maharaj.
In this series, he incorporates all the main topics of the Hindu scriptures in a beautiful logical flow. The most prominent spiritual confusions of our time are addressed and resolved one by one as the series makes its way towards the culminating topic of bhakti and the path of God realization.
Gopala, 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 Gop Yesterday, in the first part of this series on the essence of Sanatan Dharma, I started by explaining one verse of the Vedas. Tameva viditvati mrityumeti nanya pantha vidyate yanaya. This verse in gist means that a soul can only cross over Maya by knowing God. There is no other way. This is what this verse says. So I told you that, in fact, this whole 15-day speech is going to be the explanation, further explanation of this one verse, one mantra from the Vedas. So yesterday, based on this mantra, I told you that there are three eternal tattva, anadi, anant. Three things which never began and will never end. So they are Brahma, Jiva, Maya, God, the souls, and the cosmic energy, the material power, Maya. So God, the souls, and Maya are the three eternal tattva referred to in this mantra of the Vedas. Then based on this, I explained what is Sanatan Dharma. That since the souls are eternal, and souls since eternity have been wondering about why am I here, what am I doing here, who am I, what is the aim of my life, and many other such questions, so the answers to those questions must also be eternal, and they are. Because Sanatan means eternal, so Sanatan Dharma, what we call more often nowadays as Hinduism, is the eternal knowledge of how to reach God. That is Sanatan Dharma. And that knowledge is kept in the Vedas, which are also eternal. So there's no eternal book, there's no printed material which can last forever, but the Vedas themselves are a part of God, and they are eternal. They're an eternal power of God. And they're produced by God in this world to answer all the soul's questions and show them how to get to God. And there are many other scriptures like the Puranas and Ramayana and Mahabharata and Gita and Darshan Shastras and Smritis, all of these scriptures are there to further explain what's already been put forth in the Vedas. And they are all eternal as well. So all of these scriptures are eternal, but they're all based on the Ved. And this forms the basis for Sanatana Dharma. And I also answered the question, why should we have faith in these scriptures? Because they are written by those who have themselves experienced God. Or in the case of the Vedas, they're not written by anyone. They're eternally part of God, but God produces them in this world. And if someone has a doubt or a shanka, some kind of hesitancy to take someone else's word for all the things that are in the scriptures about soul and God and the path to God, when we have no direct experience of that ourselves, we don't even have a direct experience of our own soul. That's also a theoretical thing for us, let alone God. So some people may hesitate to accept what's written in our scriptures about these topics. So I told you that in fact, in the world, we're always taking other people's word for things. We take people's word, we take the word of great scientists about so many things that we've never seen with our own eyes, but we accept the existence of these things just because an expert is telling us. We have faith all over in this world. You have faith when your light turns green, you have faith that the opposing traffic is now facing a red light and they are going to obey that red light. So you have faith in them and in that light when you hit the gas pedal. You have no guarantee. You have faith when you go to a restaurant and you eat the food that no one has put poison in your food. A total stranger. You're trusting him with your life. Do you test the water every day before you drink it? No, you have faith in the city of New York to provide clean drinking water for you. So we have faith every day in many, many places in this world. In fact, the world could not even function if people didn't have some amount of trust and faith in each other. We have faith in scientists, so we believe that there are atoms and electrons, at least I do, even though I've never seen one with my own eyes. Similarly, there are experts in the spiritual field, and they have produced these scriptures like Vedas, Gita, Ramayana, etc. So taking their word for it, we have faith in the existence of God, in soul, in reincarnation, in karma, all of these things. But it's not a blind faith, because they also show us the path. The reason they tell us these things is so that we have a framework to live by and understand why all of this is here and what we're supposed to be doing in this world. But then we're supposed to follow the path that they set out in front of us. And if we do that, in the end, we will attain the complete experience of all of those things. So it's not a blind faith, because we are shown the way to get the proof for ourselves. But we have to start by believing it, then practice accordingly, then you'll get the proof. You'll get some proof along the way, and the ultimate proof comes at the end when you attain God. Now today I told you that I was going to prove that every soul is an eternal astik. Astik means believing in God. Now, this mantra, tameva viditvati mrityumeti nanya pantha vidyate yanaya, says that we have to know God. There's no other way to cross this maya, to cross this ocean of birth and death. So we have to know God, but today I'm going to tell you we already know God, we already accept Him, and we're already wholeheartedly surrendered to Him every moment of every day, and we have been forever. And in fact, there never has been a soul who wasn't wholeheartedly dedicated to God. I quoted a verse from Valmiki's Ramayana saying, Loke nahi savidyeta yo narama manubratah. There never has been a soul, nor is there, nor will there ever be, who is not wholeheartedly devoted to Ram. Everyone is ananya bhakt of God. Now you may disagree based on your own personal experience. You may say, you know, I have people in my own family who don't believe in God, let alone my colleagues and co-workers and other people that I meet on the street. Plus, we know that when you look at this world, the whole world is made up of combination of opposites. Like there's sin and there's good actions. There's beauty and ugliness. There's life and death. There's day and night. There's hot and cold. There are believers and there are non-believers. There are Astic and there are Gnostic. So how is it that I'm sitting here and telling you today, no? Contrary to this law of the universe that everything is there in pairs of opposites, contrary to that and contrary to your own experience, every single soul believes wholeheartedly in God. And even if he tried to become Gnostic, even if he tried for millions of years and concentrated on trying to become Gnostic, even for 1 second, he could not. So why is this so? I'm going to prove it to you today. First of all, let's start with this world where we see everything is happening. There's so much going on all the time. There's always some kind of activity, not only physical activity that we can see, but mental activity. Even if everything physically stops, people's minds are still running. So it means people are performing actions either physically or mentally all the time. And this world is so busy and full of all of this activity, all of our busyness. Now, Darshan Shastra says, Prayojana manuddishya mandopi na pravartate. No one can do anything without a prayojan. Even an insane person has a reason for every single action. Prayojan means your motivation or your reason for doing that, your aim. No one can even open their eyes in the morning without having an aim in mind. Why am I opening my eyes? What am I going to do? What am I trying to accomplish? So every single action has a prayojan behind it. Even an insane person cannot do anything without a reason. Now you may say, but isn't that basically the definition of an insane person? Someone who's just aimlessly doing things, having no reason for anything? So if that were true, if an insane person actually didn't have a reason behind his actions, then it would mean that we are all performing actions without prayojan as well. So are you, now you must be wondering in your mind, is Swamiji saying that we're all insane? And I'm saying yes. Hum sab log pagal hai. So, before you start to worry about what my intentions are here today, I know that I'm sitting here alone and you're almost 50-60 people, so I'm including myself in that. I am also pagal. I'm in the same boat as the whole world. So, why pagal? What is the definition? We could all agree that if someone doesn't understand the difference between real and unreal, if someone doesn't recognize his own true identity, if he doesn't know who he is, we would all agree that person is pagal. So if you ask someone, if you ask any person, just ask them a simple question, who are you? You'll get his name back right away. Oh, I'm Dinesh. So you could say to them, I wasn't asking your name. Your name was given to you by your parents. That's not who you are. I'm asking, who are you? Not what is your name. Oh, okay, I'm Punjabi or I'm Gujarati or I'm Sindhi. I'm not asking for your ethnic background. That's just related to your body. I want to know who you are. Okay, I'm a doctor. I'm a lawyer. I'm an engineer. Again, I wasn't asking what you do. I'm asking who you are. Okay, I'm a human being. May manushyam. Again, you're giving me the parichay of your physical body. I'm asking for you. Who are you? We all know that, you know, if someone dies, then sometimes we have a chance for people to come and see his body one last time. So if someone is going to see that person's body, they know that he is not there. For instance, he may say that, okay, Dinesh left this world at 4 p.m. today. So where are you going now? Oh, I'm going to see his body. Dinesh isn't there? No, Dinesh is gone. I don't know where he went, and I don't even know what that thing Dinesh is, but whoever he is, he's gone, and only his body is left. So I'm going to see his body. So on some level we know, or we've all heard, or we've all read, that I'm the soul. But we're not conscious of that. We don't really experience ourselves to be the soul. We live in body consciousness. So if someone doesn't recognize even who he is, so that person would be called insane. So we all come in this category, so we could all ask each other, ki aap bahar kaise hain? Aap to pagal khane mein rehna chahiye na? If someone is insane, he shouldn't be allowed to be walking around freely on the streets. He could harm other people. He could harm himself. So if someone asks you that question, that if you don't even know who you are, then how is it you're not institutionalized? How are you roaming about freely? You can answer that person, actually, I am institutionalized. Kyunki ye pura sansar Bhagwan ka bada pagal khana hai hum logon ke liye. All the souls who have yet to accept their own true identity as soul and that I belong to God, we all live in this big insane asylum which God has kept here for us. And He sends doctors. The doctors are the saints who themselves know who they are and they know who God is, and they come here to try to explain to us the fact. So those souls who accept their disease and they accept the teachings of the saints, they can get cured, and then they get freed from this pagal khana, and they get to go and stay with God. But those who don't, those who, you know, say, oh, I don't believe in the scriptures, we don't follow what the saints tell us, I don't even know if I believe in God. So those of us who don't accept the doctor's orders, we don't get cured, and we stay here in this world. So, all of us, although we're technically not sane, yet we all have a reason for everything we do. A person who's kept in a proper insane asylum that we keep here in this world, even that crazy person who we would call crazy, that person has a reason for everything he does. We might not understand it might not make sense to us, but he has a reason. It might look like he's laughing for no reason to us, or talking to nobody, but for him, he has a reason. And we also, we who are free to roam about this bigger insane asylum of this whole sansar, we also have a reason behind every single thing that we do. Now someone might say, there is one type of person who performs actions for no particular reason. Khal binu swarath par apkari ahimu shak eva sunu urgari. Tulsidas ji says that an evil person causes harm to others for no gain to himself. It's one thing if you harm others for your own personal gain, Then you can say, okay, you had a prayojan, you had a reason to do that. But a truly evil person has no, even if he himself is not going to benefit from it, he still goes out of his way to cause harm to others. So such a person seemingly performs actions without prayojan. We can also add another type of person to that, a God-realized saint. Par upakar vachan man kaya sant sahaj swabhav khagraya bhurj taru sam sant kripala parhit sahanit vipati vishala. A God-realized saint is the opposite of that. For no personal gain to himself, he goes out of his way to help others. In fact, even if he has to suffer or undergo any kind of suffering, he'll subject himself to that in order to help the souls. Such is the swabhav of a saint. And we can add God to this as well. Name parthasti kartavyam trishulokeshu kinchan nanavaptam vaptavyam varta eva chame maya varta eva chakarmani. Bhagwan Shri Krishna tells Arjuna in the Gita that I have no reason to perform any action. Nanavaptam avaptavyam. There's nothing in all the three worlds for me to do. I already have attained everything. There's nothing God needs to do. He's already self-content, self-complacent. But Krishna says, nonetheless, I come in this world and I perform actions. What has Krishna not done? He fought a war. He did ras with gopis. He stole butter from the houses of the gopis. He got married to 16,108 queens and had 10 children with each of them. In other words, any karma imaginable, even though he has no desire for himself, he did all of those actions. So seemingly we have three types of personalities who perform action without any reason behind it. An evil person, a God-realized saint, and God himself. But in fact, if we look more deeply, they also have reasons behind their actions. Kalanha hridaya atitapa visekhi jarahi sada parasampati dekhi. An evil person actually feels pain. He suffers when he sees someone else happy. His heart burns when he sees someone else who prospers. So he actually feels good by harming someone else. So he has an aim behind what he's doing. Even if he's not visibly profiting from harming that person, he feels good by doing it. And that's his reason. He does have a reason behind it. A saint has a similar reason. Par dukha dukha sukha sukha dekhi par. A saint is the opposite. The saint feels badly when he sees someone else suffering, and he feels happy to see someone else attain true happiness. Therefore, the saint also feels good by helping a soul, and God also comes in this same category. It's his nature. He wants to help the souls and he feels good seeing them happy. So every single person, whether they be mayadhin, jeev, mayatit, saints, or mayadhish, Bhagwan, all three types of personalities always have a reason behind every single action. Mayadhin means us souls, we're under Maya. We have a reason because of every action we do, we have some reason behind it. Mayatit means those souls who attained God, they knew God, so they went beyond Maya. they also have reasons for every action. And God, who is Mayadhish, He's the ruler of Maya, He also has a reason behind every single action. So, the next step is, let's find out what the reason is. Now, even if we called Brihaspati or Saraswati the god and goddess of knowledge, and we asked them to apply the full power of their intellect and write down all the reasons behind everyone's actions, they couldn't do it, because they would have to write and keep writing and never stop. The list of reasons would never stop. For one thing, souls are uncountable in number. The number of souls in existence is unlimited. And number two, each soul's desires keep changing. One second you're thinking, what do I want? Oh, I want some water. Then the next minute, what do I want? I think I want chai. The next minute, what do I want? Oh, I want to watch some TV. The next minute, oh, I feel tired. Let me have a nap. Our desires keep changing from minute to minute. So how could you keep track of all the desires of all the souls? It's uncountable. So the reasons behind our actions are in fact unlimited. There are an unlimited number of prayojan behind our actions. Right? Wrong. All of those prayojan can in fact be incorporated into one single prayojan, one single reason behind every single action of all the unlimited souls. What is that one reason? Just ask a young boy or girl who's going to school, and now they're on holidays, but if you would have asked them a month or two ago when their exams were coming up, and you said, what do you want? They would have said, I want to pass my exams. Oh, really? Why do you want that? That's your desire? You want to pass your exam? There must be a reason behind that. Yes, I have a reason. I want to pass so I can go to the next grade level. Okay, why do you want to go to the next grade level? Well, because in this manner, eventually I'll get a degree, maybe I'll even get a master's or a PhD. I'll get a good education. Okay, so why do you want to have such a great education? So I can get good nokari, good service, a good job. Oh, really? You're doing all of that effort, years and years of studying, so you can work for somebody else? You don't even like following the instructions of your own parents. Your own mother, who kept you in her womb for 9 months, gave you life, gave birth to you. Even you don't like following her instructions, and you're going to do this much effort for years and years to get that much education so you can work for someone, take orders from someone else? Why? Oh, because if I do that, I'll get money. Okay, so money is your prayojan. Why do you want money? Because when I get money, then I can buy things that I want. I can have things to enjoy. Okay, so why do you want to have those things to enjoy? Because by enjoying those things, I feel happy. I get anand, peace, happiness, chain. Whatever word you want to use for it, we'll use the word anand. Anand, or happiness. This is what you want. This is the real thing you're after. All those other things are only because you want happiness. So this is the one single prayojan which is behind every action of every soul. Even a little ant. If you see an ant crawling across the floor and you put your finger like that, pretending like you're going to squash him, he'll avoid you. Why? Because even that ant doesn't want suffering. He wants happiness. So from an ant all the way up to Brahma, every living being wants only anand. All these seemingly endless desires that we have are all desires that we create because we want to fulfill our original desire for happiness. So all those other desires are like spokes of a wheel radiating out from a central point, but that point that they're radiating out from is our original desire for Anand. So every single one of us wants the exact same thing. We may create different desires in order to fulfill that. And in fact, sometimes you see people, the same person has opposite desires at different times to fulfill the same thing. For instance, if you see someone crying, you might ask him, "Why are you crying? Don't you want happiness? You're making yourself more unhappy by crying." Let's say this person just had a big tragedy in their life. Someone's house burned down, and maybe a member of their family got killed. So all of their house, their possessions, everything is gone, and even their father died, all in the same day. And the person is sitting there crying. So you come to him and say, "You had so many bad things happen to you today, and on top of that you're crying? Why make yourself more miserable?" He's saying, "No, I'm not making myself miserable by crying. By crying, I'm like cooling off the heat of that suffering that I was feeling inside. So I'm crying because crying in this state makes me happy." So sometimes you laugh for happiness. Sometimes you cry for happiness. Sometimes you sleep for happiness. But if you just keep sleeping for 12, 16, 20 hours, eventually you'll get tired of sleeping, you'll get up. So you were sleeping for happiness, then you get up, you wake up. Why? For happiness. Sometimes you like to have a lot of people around you, but eventually maybe you want to have some alone time. So you go and you sit quietly somewhere. But if you sit quietly for too long, again you'll get bored. You want to have some halchal, some people, some talking around you. So sometimes we want quiet, sometimes we want loud, sometimes we want to be alone, sometimes we want companionship. You want to eat. Why? Because it makes you happy, but you eat to a certain point and then you want to stop. So sometimes eating makes you happy, sometimes not eating makes you happy. But all of these different things we're doing, all of these virodhi karma, they're all for the same reason, for Anand. Now, at this point, five philosophers come along and they say, no, not only Anand is the goal of your life. In fact, you have five goals, including Anand. You have Jivan, the desire to live, stay alive. Gyan, the desire to gain more and more knowledge. Number three, Anand, the desire for happiness. Number four, Swatantrata, you want to be free. And number five, Sabparshasan. You want that everyone should do what you tell them to do. Sab log hamari baat mane. These are the five things that we want. Not only Anand, we want all five of these things. So these philosophers come and one of them explains the first thing. He says, for instance, one time there was a woodcutter who had a very hard life. He used to go in the jungle and cut wood, even if it was hot like today or even more, 110 degrees every day he had to go in the jungle. And he barely made enough money to support himself and his family. Today he was hungry, tired, he's coming back carrying the wood on his head, and he started to feel dizzy, so he just put it down and he sat down on a rock and he said, "Oh death, even you have turned your face away from me." He just said in anger, like that. So Yamraj, the god of death, thought of playing a little joke on him. So he appeared in front of him and he said, "You called? No, I haven't turned my face away from you." The man was scared seeing Yamraj. "What do you want? Why have you come here?" "Well, I've come to take you with me. Isn't that what you wanted?" No. I was just saying like that. I don't really want to die." See, even in the most miserable state, a person wants to stay alive. Even a person is on his deathbed, he's got, you know, a tube for breathing, he's got a tube for feeding his body. He's got hardly any life left in him, but he wants to stay alive a few more minutes. So, Number one, everybody wants life, not death. Number two, Dhyan. We all want knowledge. In fact, we're all secretly watching each other all day long, trying to see, how does this person walk? How does this person talk? What do they say? What do they talk about? How does this person dress? So we're gathering knowledge quietly, secretly, all day long. And if anyone tells us something that we don't know, we'll say, oh yes, I know. So we want to have more and more and more knowledge. That's number two. Number three, Anand. That one is obvious. Number four, freedom. To prove this, philosopher number four says that if you are offered to have a beautiful mansion with all the modern luxuries and entertainments, but you were forced to stay under house arrest for the rest of your life, all of that could be yours. A multi-million dollar mansion, fully outfitted for your enjoyment, but you're never allowed to leave the house. Or you can beg on the street and be free. Everyone will decide to be free. No one would decide to spend their whole life under house arrest, even if they had all of those luxuries. So freedom is also a basic human desire. And number five, we desire to have power over everyone, not necessarily like a dictatorship, but we want that everybody should do what we want. Even if we're polite about it, you know, a child may not order his parents around, but the child wants that whatever I want, my parents should do that thing. So this is also a basic human desire, that we wish to always get our way. But you could ask these philosophers that, why do you want life? Oh, for happiness. Why do you want knowledge? For happiness. Why do you want freedom? So I can be happy. And why do you want everyone to do what you want? For happiness. So again, all of these five are shrunk down to just one. Just the desire to be happy. So the question is, if you ask that boy again, that we got through that whole sequence and we finally found out, that your real desire is Anand. Now what if I ask you, why do you want Anand? The answer to all the other questions, why do you want this? For happiness. Why do you want this? For happiness. But why do you want to be happy? There's no answer. No one has the answer to that. What? What do you mean, why? I just want to be happy. That's the way everybody is. So we could ask the question, were we all taught to desire happiness? We had to be taught every other thing in this life. We could, even something as simple as recognizing our own mother, we couldn't learn on our own. Our mother has to tell us, from the time we're a little baby, we're told thousands of times, I'm your mother. Call me mummy. I'm your mother. I'm your mother. Thousands of times. Then that little child learns, oh, this is my mother. We couldn't even learn something as simple as who our own mother is. So did we have to be taught to desire happiness? Was there a point in everyone's life where their parents or someone sat them down and said, now son, or now daughter, this is a very important thing to understand in life. You have to desire Anand. No, nobody ever taught us that. Yet we all know it. So isn't it amazing in this world where variation is the law? If you go outside, there's some big trees out in the parking lot behind the temple. If you examined every single leaf from one of those trees, you couldn't find two identical leaves. There's that much variation in this world. Bring all the people on this whole earth planet together and try and find two people whose faces exactly match. You can't. Try to find two fingerprints that match. You can't. Variation is the law of this universe. So when this is the law of the universe, isn't it amazing that without being taught, every single person desires one thing and one thing only? Anand. That's it. It's an amazing part of our existence. So the question is why? This is where we come to now. Why does every single soul desire Anand? So to answer this, I'm going to take you into the Vedas. There's a part of Taittiriya Upanishad where Bhrigu is asking questions from his father, Varun, who's a God-realized saint. So he asks him, Bhrigur vai varunihi pitaramupasasar adhihi bhagavo brahmeti. Father, please tell me, what is God? What is Brahma? So his father answered, Yato va imani bhutani jayante yena jatani jivanti yat prayantyabhisam vishanti tad brahma vijigyasasva. Son, that from which all the souls in this whole universe emerged, from whom everyone came, in whom and because of whom everyone is existing right now, and into whom everyone returns during Mahapralaya, that is Brahma. So Bhrigu is saying, okay, from whom, in whom, but who is that whom? That's what I want to know. You gave me a riddle, a puzzle, but you still haven't told me who God is. Who is Brahma? What is Brahma? So his father told him, Satapo tapyata, satapas taptva. God is not the subject of intellect. I cannot intellectually describe for you who God is. But based on what I've said, go and do devotion. Go and do sadhana. And see if you can experience God. So Bhrigu went. And he did sadhana for a long time, and he came back to his father and he told him, Father, I think I've learned who Brahma is. Annam brahmeti vyajanat. Father, anna is Brahma. Anna, meaning like grains, like rice, wheat, the food we eat is Brahma. So his father was silent. So Bhrigu explained, because you know, when you eat food, that food is digested by your body, it gets absorbed into your blood, it ends up becoming your tissues, your muscles, your organs, your bone marrow, your reproductive fluid, all of that is made from the food you eat. And eventually a new person is born from that reproductive fluid. And then he grows, and when he dies, again his body goes back into the earth and gets absorbed again by plants eventually, and it becomes food again. So we're from food, we're sustained by food, and we go back into food. His father remained silent. So Bhrigu understood, no, that's not the right answer. So he went back and did more sadhana, more tap. The second time he came back and he said, Prano brahmeti vyajanat. Now he went beyond the physical sthul padarth of just food. He said pran. Like when you breathe, you get pran in your body. It's like the energy of your body. Five different kinds of pran keep circulating in your body. His father was still silent. So he went back. He did more tapasya. He came back a third time. And he said, Mano brahmeti vyajanat. Father, man, your antahkaran, your mind, is Brahma. His father was still silent. He went back again, did more tap. He came back this time, the fourth time, and he said, Vijnanam brahmeti vyajanat. Vijnan means soul. He said, Father, soul, atma, is Brahma. Now he's gone beyond the physical matter of food. He went beyond prana. He went beyond the subtle matter of the mind. All of this physical things in the world, the pran, your man, all of that is non-living. Now he came to a living, conscious thing, the soul. But his father was still silent. So he went back and he did more tapasya. This time when he returned, he said, Father, Anando brahmeti bhyajanat, anandad dheva khalvimani bhutani jayante, anandena jatani jivanti, anandam prayantyabhisam vishanti. This time his father smiled and he says, Now you have understood what is Brahma. And the answer is, Brahma is Anand. Anand is Brahma. What is God? God is happiness. God is Anand. You've all heard the term Sat Chit Anand. We say Sat Chit Anand Brahma. So where did the Sat and Chit go? Why are we saying God is Anand? Why don't we say He's Sat Chit Anand? Because Sat and Chit are included in Anand. Just like sometimes you actually, Sat is within Chit, and both Sat and Chit are within Anand. So sometimes you hear people say Sat Chit Anand Brahm. Sometimes you hear them say Chit Anand Brahm, because the Sat is understood. And sometimes, as Ved said, Anand Brahm. So Sat and Chit are qualifiers of the Anand. It means, what kind of Anand is God? Sat. It means eternal, everlasting happiness. Real fact. That is the type of happiness that God is. And Chit means Chetan. God is not like the Jara Sukh we get from this world. He is an actual divine, not just existence, but a living supreme power. So that Anand is Sat and it is Chit, and God Himself is that Anand. Sometimes you've heard people say probably that Bhagwan mein Anand hai. This is just a way of explaining, but it's technically incorrect. There is not Anand in God, because if there was Anand in God, it means God is something else and Anand is something else. But actually, God is Anand. Just like you, if someone says there's water in the ocean, that makes about as much sense as saying there's Anand in God. See, what is the ocean? You have another word, Jalanidhi. It means a huge reservoir of water. Khub sara pani. To khub sare pani mein pani bhara hai. Does that make sense to say? No. Doesn't make sense to say in a huge reservoir of water there's water. Obviously. So you can't say there's water in the ocean. The ocean itself is a huge reservoir of water. So you can't say there's Anand in God. God Himself is Anand. If He weren't Anand, it would be like a rasgulla. What do you start with? A dry ball of milk solids. No ras in that. You add the ras in, then it becomes rasgulla. So are we saying God is like that dry ball of milk solids and we have to add ras to Him? No, Ved says, Raso Vaisaha. Taittiriya Upanishad says God is ras. That word ras also means Anand. It didn't say Raso Vaitasmin, that there is ras in God. It said Raso Vaisaha, Vahi ras hai. Just like Anando Brahmani would mean there is Anand in God. But Ved says, no, Anando Brahma. God Himself is Anand. So, God Himself is Anand. And we desire Anand. So it proves that every single soul is astic. I told you in the beginning, I was going to prove to you that everybody loves God and desires only God and nothing else. So, no matter who you talk to in this world, even a so-called Gnostic, If you ask that person, do you desire Anand? He'll say yes. Every living being desires Anand. Well, that Anand is a synonym for God. Anand is God. God is Anand. So the very fact that we're desiring happiness means we're desiring God. So every soul desires God and only God and can never stop desiring God. It's the same thing as saying you desire happiness and only happiness and you can never stop desiring happiness even for a second. Even if you went and did tapasya trying to think, I want to desire to be unhappy. You concentrate on that for millions of years, you can't desire unhappiness. You have to desire Anand. It means we all naturally desire God. So, we're all devotees of Anand, are we not? We're all servants of Anand. We all desire, in fact, every moment of every day, we're only thinking about one thing, how to get happiness. So, hum sab Anand ke bhakt hain. Isliye hum sab Bhagwan ke bhakt hain. If we're devotees of happiness, we're devotees of God. But the question still remains, why? I prove to you that every single soul already believes in God, loves God, and desires God, even if from his mouth he says he doesn't. But I still haven't explained why we desire happiness, or why we desire God. This is very simple to understand. If I have this flower in my hand, pretend this flower is a clump of earth, from the earth. It's a clump of dirt from the earth. So, this clump of dirt is ansh of the earth. Ansh of prithvi. It means it's a part of that and it belongs to it. So, the earth is its anshi and this is ansh. So, every ansh has a natural attraction to his anshi, or you can say a natural love, a natural desire for his anshi. So, you might ask, then why is it separate? Why, if they love each other so much, why do they not join together? Well, because I'm holding it apart. If I let go, what happens? Instantly, Ansh rejoins his Anshi. So, Ved says, Chinmatram Shri Hare Ransham Sukshmam Aksharam Abhyayam Krishnadhinam Iti Prahur Jivam Jnana Gunashrayam. Every soul is Ansh of God. Very simple. So he is our Anshi, just like earth is Anshi and that clump of dirt is Ansh. So every soul is Ansh of God, who is Anshi. So it's a law of nature. The Ansh is attracted to his Anshi. Just like the only reason this is separate from the earth is because I was holding it, similarly, Maya has a hold of us. If Maya somehow could be made to let go of us, you wouldn't even have to do anything else. The soul would automatically go to God. Just like water that rains down on land, what does it do? It runs downhill until it rejoins the ocean. The ocean is its Anshi, and those droplets of water which rain down in the mountains, those are Ansh of the ocean. So they cannot be stopped. They will rejoin the ocean. Even if you put a dam, the water builds up, and eventually it overflows the dam and it goes back to the ocean. Every flame is Ansh of the sun. That's why every flame burns up towards its Anshi. So every soul naturally desires God. So we are Ansh of God who is Anand. So it makes sense. Ansh desires his Anshi. It means we all desire Anand because we are Ansh of God who is Anand. Very simple. And we've been desiring God, or we've been desiring Anand every second since eternity. Why every second? Because nahi kaschit chanamapi jatu tishthatya karma krit. Gita says that our mind cannot remain akarma, means without thinking something, without doing something, even for one chana, even for a fraction of a second. Our mind is always busy. And what is it busy doing? Thinking of ways to find anand. Every single thought we have is for anand. So pratik chana, every moment of every day we're busy trying to get anand. In other words, trying to find God. And how long has this been going on for? Since eternity. Because, as I told you yesterday, gya gyo dva vaja vishani shavaja yeka bhoktri bhogyartha yukta anantas chatma vishvarupo hyakarta trayam yada vindate brahma metat. Ved says, souls and God and Maya are all eternal. So it means we haven't had a million or a billion or a trillion lifetimes. We've had unlimited lifetimes since eternity. It never began. Because we're as old as God is. And this universe also has a cyclical existence. So the universe never began either. It's destroyed temporarily during Mahapralaya and then it's reproduced. So we've been taking birth after birth since eternity until now, and from eternity until now, every moment we've been trying to do one thing and one thing only: find happiness, find anand. The same thing we're doing all day today, we've done all day every day in this life and every life past, and we'll keep doing in every life into the future until we find anand. The amazing thing is that even though our effort has been uninterrupted every moment for uncountable lifetimes, we've never found even a single drop of anand. None of us has experienced a drop of anand from eternity until now. That is amazing. You might say, well, I think I have because I get enjoyment in this world. But in fact, Ved says no, not according to the definition of true happiness. Yo vai bhuma tat sukham. Chandogya Upanishad says real happiness has to be unlimited in amount and it has to last forever. So although we've enjoyed this jagadanand, this rasgullanand in this world uncountable times, that doesn't count as real anand because it's limited in amount. It's not unlimited in amount, it's limited. And it also doesn't last forever. It's only temporary. So none of the happiness we've experienced in any of our lifetimes is actually real anand. Soi sukh lavalesh barek jin sapne ulahahu te nahi ginahi khagesh brahma sukhahi sajjan sumati. Tulsidas ji says that if a person even in a dream tastes a single drop of that real divine happiness, never mind the happiness of this world, he'll forget about the happiness of liberation and never look back. So considering that, have we ever tasted even a drop, even in a dream, of true anand? No. Because the anand of this world still looks great to us. If we had tasted a drop of true anand, we would see, oh, it's like holding a candle up before the sun. That anand of this world is like a candle, and the anand of the divine world, real happiness, is like the sun. There's no comparison. So because of this fact that we think this worldly happiness is so great, it proves that we've never enjoyed, even once, true happiness. So today, I've explained basically two things to you. That every soul is astic, every soul is desiring only God. And that means every soul desires only Anand. So the aim of our life is to attain Anand, to attain perfect happiness by attaining God. And the fact that we've lived every life in pursuit of this happiness, in other words, in pursuit of God, means that we're all 100% perfect believers in God. We're all Astic. So tomorrow, I'm going to prove the exact opposite to you. That none of us are Astic. We're all perfect Gnostic. And even if we try for millions of years on our own, under our own power, we can't become Astic even for one moment. So I am going to prove this to you logically, but don't worry. I'll also show you how it's very easy for us to become real Astic. So come back tomorrow at the same time and I'll continue on this topic. And now we'll do a little bit of Kirtan. We'll chant Shyam Sundar Hamaro Yaar. Our true divine friend is Shyam Sundar Krishna. So while we're doing this chant, you can think of Krishna being here very close to you, being with you. And also think about the fact that he's always been with you and he's your eternal Yaar, your eternal very close friend.
Shyam Sundar Hamaro Yaar Lakhan Ko Jiya Lal Hai Shyam Shyam Sundar Hamaro Yaar Lakhan Ko Jiya Lal Hai
Shyam Sundar Hamaro Thank you.
गुण के घोर पीतांबर
Thank you.
Charani Gati Bhajan. Tan Murari Kripalu Bhajan Jodhi Alar Bhajan.
वन बिहारी श्री यादवेंद्र सरकार की जय।